Alt NPR.
The following is an installment of Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, an audio archive, and a blog, visit toeradio.org.
I'm at the brink of destitution, so I'm forced to take a job as a chef at a home for girls who all suffer from anorexia nervosa. There are 5 girls, and it's my job to get them all to start eating. On my first day on the job, I decide to take the direct approach. I serve up fried chicken with a creamy pasta salad, and for dessert, I serve them ice cream-filled chocolate eclairs. All 5 of the girls stuff their faces. They not only clean their plates, they go for second helpings as well. So after dinner, I crawl into my bed, confident that I am indeed the right man for this job. But then, I hear the sound of flushing toilets, and this goes on all night long. The next morning, I get up early, and when the girls awake, I have ready for them a breakfast of bacon omelets with fruit smoothies secretly made with whole milk and ice cream. For lunch, I prepare triple-decker Reuben sandwiches with French fries cooked in beer batter. Dinner is 3 courses: baked potatoes with sour cream and chives, fried catfish stuffed with cabbage, and a double-layer chocolate cake. Again, the girls eat everything I place in front of them, and again, the toilets flush all day long. I don't sleep a wink that night. I just lay there in bed, contemplating how to best this obstacle which stands before me. And in the morning, as the sun comes up, I have a plan. I will take them all on, individually, one by one. I can't lose this job, you see. Everyone will be disappointed. Everyone will be angry with me. I'll end up on the streets again. I start with Katie. When everyone is in bed, I tiptoe into her room with a plate of stuffed red peppers. Earlier in the afternoon, I had taken 8 red peppers, sliced off their tops, and scraped out the seeds and the veins. Then, I sautéed some onions and garlic in extra virgin olive oil, adding 4 large juicy tomatoes and a 1/3 cup of currants. I let this simmer for 10 minutes, and then I added a 1/2 cup of parsley, a 1/2 cup of toasted pine nuts, a 1/2 cup of fresh mint, a 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 3 cups of brown basmati rice. Then, when it was just right, I stuffed the peppers, splashed a little rose Chardonnay wine on them, and placed them in the oven. Katie is very impressed. I feed her all 8 peppers by hand. She eats every last morsel. Then she passes out. I tuck her into bed, turn the light out, and head for Susan's room. I sneak into Susan's room with a tray loaded up with nut bread cakes and a large bowl containing a sweet cheese mixture, which I had prepared earlier in the day. I mixed a vanilla whole milk yogurt and a 3-layer cheesecloth. Then I tied off the cheesecloth and hung it over a basin in order to drip out the whey. I let it hang like this for 12 hours, and then I mixed in some cinnamon, chopped dates, dried apricots, and a tablespoon of honey. As I spread the sweet cheese on the soft almond buns, Susan sips the acidiferous milk which has dripped from the cheesecloth. She sips it slowly, savoring every drop. I take a piece of date bread and spread some more cheese on it for her, but she doesn't touch it until she's licked the basin clean with her soft pink tongue. Then she attacks the cakes. She devours them all, and when she's finished, I wipe the crumbs from her pillow, and I brush the hair from her face. And then I move on to Ellen's room. I slide into Ellen's room with a bowl of hot fennel soup and a fondue maker. I prepared the soup by simmering a 1-pound fennel bulb, a cup of white wine, a cup of prepared vegetable bouillon, and some toasted pine nuts. I simmered this for 10 minutes, then I pureed the whole thing in a blender. Ellen opens up her mouth and pours the soup right down her throat. Her eyelids flutter and her head sways back and forth. Then I light the fondue cooker and I feed her by hand honey almond paste balls. I feed her these until she stops smacking her lips. Then I blow out the fondue cooker and take out a plate of succulent pear slices. I use the pear slices to wipe away the honey and the chocolate from her face, and then I gently slide them into her mouth. Then I tuck her into bed and gather up the soup bowl and the fondue cooker, and I head for Catherine's room. I bring Catherine a plate of fried chicken wings battered with a mixture of Turkish spices and Hefeweizen beer. She eats them with her hands, and when she's done, I wipe her down with a warm, moist cloth which I've soaked in rose water. Then I feed her a plate of fuchsia pink ginger snaps, which I had cut into small crescent moon shapes. I got the fuchsia pink dye by taking a fresh, finely grated beetroot and squeezing it through a cheesecloth. Then I poured it over the cookie sheet as I took it out of the oven. Pink is Catherine's favorite color, and she eats the entire tray of ginger snaps. Catherine's almost too easy. I have the feeling she doesn't even belong here. As I turn to leave the room, she takes a sheet of paper out from underneath her pillow and hands it to me. It's a list of meals which she would like for me to prepare for her. Some of the meals look expensive and difficult, but like I said, I really need to keep this job. So I put the list in my pocket, turn off the lights, and move on to Tracy's room. I bring Tracy a plate of raw oysters soaked in lemon sauce. Tracy is tough. As soon as I open the door, she flings a book at my head. When I sit down on her bed, she clamps her mouth shut, purses her lips, and shakes her head furiously at me. So I crack open one of the oysters and gently rub the soft center on her pursed lips. I do this for almost 10 minutes, and then, finally, her jaw slackens and her lips slowly open. I slip the lemon-soaked oyster into her mouth, and she likes it. She likes it a lot. She starts gobbling, and in order to get her to slow down, I start having her do tricks for me in exchange for the oysters. I have her do splits, I have her stand on her head, I even have her run around the room on all fours. Eventually, though, we run out of oysters. Tracy crawls back into her bed and falls into a deep sleep. I gather up the shells and, exhausted, head for my room. My plan is, of course, a smashing success. Ellen, Tracy, Katie, Catherine, and Susan all begin to eat. And the toilets, they stop making noise. But my job is now consuming me. I'm spending all of my time racing back and forth between the kitchen and their rooms. Their nightly feedings take all of my energy. I use the few hours I do have to myself for sleep. But it isn't enough. And while the girls begin to grow plump and their cheeks begin to turn rosy, I myself begin to grow thin and my face takes on a gaunt pall. I become a ghost of my former self, and sometimes in the smoke of the kitchen, it seems as if my body has no weight, no substance whatsoever. Finally, one evening, while climbing the stairs for yet another night of gorging and gluttony, I collapse on the stairs. I'm fired the very next day, cast out into the cold, and not a single one of the girls comes to my support. They all just giggle and smile at my replacement, this jolly French frog. 5 months later, I'm begging in front of the mall when a car pulls up and my 5 girls get out. All 5 are delightfully plump and they are all wearing smart raincoats and carrying parasols. But not a single one of them even looks at me as I call out to them from my place on the pavement. They all pass me by.
You've been listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. For more information, an audio archive, and a blog, visit toeradio.org.
Alt, NPR.